Listen and stream the only talk radio, Freedom 106.5, for the only talk that matter.
It's time now for our favorite doctor, the lunchtime doctor, Dr. Sophia Mohammed, getting ready to answer all your medical questions. Lunchtime doctor, hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Base, and good afternoon to all those locked in for the next hour for your medical challenges. Here's where we dissect those problems. We get to the bottom of it. We find a strategy of how to move forward. And to those who are having their lunch at home, share to us what's on your lunchtime plate. So without further ado, Base is going to give you those numbers.
All right, folks, of course, your numbers are 627-3223 and 625-2257. Your messages for WhatsApp messages only, 306-1065. And of course, you heard here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangit 106.1, Vibe City 105 FM, and Sky 99.5. Feel free to message or other frequencies, and they will forward your messages to us. Let's say happy belated Mother's Day going out to all the mothers. And of course, hope you had a great Mother's Day yesterday, Doctor.
Most definitely. You know, it's really important that we try to not just spend that time, but create meaningful moments with those we love, with those that are here with us. This Mother's Day, many of my colleagues, unfortunately, it was either a first or a second Mother's Day without their moms, having lost them to some medical condition, some tragic condition. So I actually spent a little bit of time consoling a fair amount of my own colleagues. And that's why when we do have those that are present, we make sure we appreciate them. Life is truly fragile. One day you're here, next day you're not. And I don't mean to sound so morbid, but that is sometimes the case. So in every time when we can, every day should be Mother's Day. Every day should be Father's Day. We just had a mention of International Day of Families. Every day should be something where we pay attention to our family, our health, the things that matter to us.
Thank you there very much, Doctor. And of course, I'm one of those persons who knows how that feels. This would have been the second Mother's Day without my mom, who died from cancer about 2 years ago, right?
My sincerest condolences, that we understand.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. All right, folks. So 627-3223, 625-2257. You know, Doctor, I have a little thing that I wanted to talk to you about. Just on Saturday morning, I was getting a coffee. I was heading down Central, stopped out at this quick shop to get a coffee. There was a guy in front of me. He ordered a French vanilla. Right, I ordered the same, but he went before me, he ordered two. And I saw him, he took three packs of sugar and he put it in one. You know, and I said, "Well, sir, you know, that is already sweet. You're putting more sugar in it." He said, "Boy, it's not for me, no. The person who I'm ordering it for, they have a sweet tooth." I said, "Well, you had to talk to them. That's a lot of sugar." He said, "Well, boy, you know, you just talk how much time you could talk. And then when you talk to them, they don't want to talk to you." So I just would like to advise them. There are a lot of people going through this. I just thought, you know, a lot of people who would be speaking to people about their health, you know, how much sugar they take and some of their lifestyle habits. And they're a bit stubborn. I think besides some of the habits that, you know, get us sick is the stubbornness in a lot of ways. So how would you advise somebody like that, any family who keeps talking to somebody and they just don't want to listen?
So there's a line that, you know, we like Pekong here in Trinidad and Tobago. Sometimes we have to speak in relatable terms. In fact, over this weekend, I did share, because we had a Diabetes Association event where we did talk to mothers, talk to a number of our clients, our patients. And I started with, "You're sweet enough already, so we don't need that extra sugar." And that actually opened up the conversation. Sometimes we have to find a way to not come across as if we are putting anyone down or judging anyone for using more sugar than they must, but rather that place of value, care, and concern. That is how we communicate right across the board, where we try that compassionate communication. And sometimes us Trinidadians have a way of saying, "Well, don't use so much sugar," and then it comes across as if we are putting people down, judging, and that's not really the case. So to those who would like to give advice to loved ones, speak from a place of concern for their health. Speak from a place of, you don't want them to reach the hospital. Listen, you don't want them to have problems with complications of diabetes. And this is where, or you can even suggest, "You heard Dr. Saf talking on radio about the complications of diabetes, and you want to implement, you want everyone to have a good quality of life. So there are many things one can say, but you see that starting line, you're sweet enough already, you don't need any more sugar.
I like
that I find always works.
Great advice, I like that. So your mama guide them into health.
Well, a little bit of peacock. So much, mama guys.
All right, I like that. I like that. Of course, you could always tell them, listen, it's a nice way to sit down and listen to the lunchtime doctor while at home, while driving, and I may just hear something that may, you know, trigger off a better lifestyle. Yeah.
Well, I do want to say hello to the IRO, the president. He shared that every single lunchtime doctor, we were at a conference, a United Nations FPA conference on Friday evening, and he shared that every single lunchtime doctor, he's always tuning, and he encourages his all the organizations that he's part of. He's the president of the IRO organization right here in Trinidad and Tobago. And he shared that he always tunes into the lunchtime doctor and advocates the information he shares here. So thank you so much to the many loyal listeners we have, including those in the faith-based organizations.
All right, beautiful. Let's go to your questions right now. 627-322-3625-2257. Hello. Good afternoon. Welcome to the lunchtime, Doctor.
Hello and good afternoon, Doc. Doc, I just need your honest opinion on this, because in my age of friends, I see they pursue their education and stuff, and the time to get married and get pregnant, they run into the 35 and 40 years, and I see they have so much difficulty going to Barbados and all this fertility thing, and after the 40, it's difficult to get pregnant and have the kids. And I think we need to have this discussion, and you could give me a clear idea. I say for girls, 25 to 28, guys, don't let the 35 cross you. What's your opinion? Thanks again and for the good job you're doing.
Thank you so much. A very important conversation to be has. I would say, one decade ago, prime reproductive rate would have been, say, from between that 20s to 30s for females and the other age bracket you said for males. But now, with the quality of life being improved, in fact, just this weekend again, we discussed a new mother at age 39 and how uncomplicated, how very easy her pregnancy was and her delivery. So I believe now there's a host of information, there's a host of investigations one can do during the pregnancy to rule out any possibilities of some of the typical complications we see in pregnancy. And of course, one is very aware of how to take care of their health pre-pregnancy. So it's almost like that quality, when we talk about longevity and the quality of life and how one is extending our age, our lifespan here, then it's the same thing that applies to pregnancy. Yes, there's still ages that we look at very cautiously, over 40 for primigravida gravida, that's first time pregnancy. We call that advanced maternal age. But before that, it's still within safe conditions. However, seeing that, we are mindful that pregnancy is still one foot in, one foot out, and one must be very mindful of being following through with the obstetrician, following through with a proper medical team. So yes, there are persons who still go across to either Barbados or right here for the in vitro clinic here in Trinidad, but the age of first-time pregnancies are shifting upwards. And that's because of the well medical innovations right here in Trinidad and across the world.
All right, let's get another call. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon, sir. Good afternoon, doctor. I think I heard you all start to talk about sugar. Is it so?
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Now, hear this. In most packages, you would see a little section, you know, nutritional facts. And you will see sodium so much percent. You will see cholesterol so much percent. You will see total carbohydrates so much in grams. You will see it. When you have sugars now, sometimes you have 5 grams, you have 10, you have... I want to know what is that. If you are diabetic and you have to use those things, and sometimes they tell you no sugars or sugar-free or something, but although the nutritional facts will show otherwise, what is the acceptable grammage of sugars that a diabetic should indulge in, and if at all. Thank you very much.
So you're very correct. Thank you so much for that very important perspective. Every single thing that we do have, we should turn it to the back. And as the caller suggested, read the nutritional facts. So let me give you what is the usual or what is the recommended total amount of sugar per day one should have. And it's very easy to remember. No more than 6 teaspoons. Now, not a big tablespoon. I want you to think of a little teaspoon. 6 teaspoons is the recommended total sugar intake for one day. Just 6 teaspoons. A diabetic is even less if they are very complicated. So if they have chronic renal failure, if they have eye disease, eye damage, peripheral neuropathy, then we need to reduce that even more. If it's early diabetes, then we can still work around that 6 teaspoons. It is also suggested that if you do have a more active lifestyle, you can go up to 8 teaspoons. But that is no more than 30 grams of sugar in a day. Now, let me put that into perspective. Some of these high, say, sugar drinks or carbonated drinks can have as much as 37 grams, one drink, 37 grams of sugar in one drink, in one go. You have knocked out or crossed your total sugar intake in one drink. Far less for some of the meals we may be having. High carbohydrate meals, high processed meals, high oily foods. So sometimes just one meal can knock that out. And that's why we always talk about in moderation. We always talk about managing the plate. And we always talk about substituting. Because we do know Trinis do have a sweet tooth. But why not utilize other forms? Reduce the sugar intake. So I hope that answers your question. It's no more than 6 teaspoons per day. And that's 24 grams of sugar.
All right, good advice there. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the lunchtime, Doctor.
Good afternoon, sir. Doc, my wife is 76. I am 77. Just we have the monitoring thing to check your sugar at home. Her own read, 104. My own read, 116. But she went to the clinic a few days after because she had a blood test in April, and they tell her, she figure reading from 1 to 6 is good, but she figure reading 7. I want to know if the monitor we have with that 116 is wrong, or I don't know how to comprehend that. Can you help me?
Of course, I certainly can. So let me try to break it down. It depends. That 116 milligrams per deciliter is an acceptable value, but it depends on when you're taking it. If it's a fasting blood sugar, that means you would have not had anything to eat, anything yet in your system. There's no sugar circulating. 116 is considered mildly elevated because we want it under 100. However, if you've had something to eat and there's sugars circulating, so we call that a 2-hour postprandial or post-meal, then we can accept up to 120, even 140 milligrams per deciliter. So the 116 can be considered normal if it's a random blood sugar or if you've had a meal, but it can be considered elevated if it's the fasting blood sugar value.
What does 7 mean? What will you mean by diabetes 1 and diabetes 2? And up to now, I don't know what is that.
Okay, no problem. So let's explain that. There's a type 1 diabetes and type 2 diabetes. When we say type 1, the type 1 diabetes tend to present more so in children, and that's where there's a problem with the pancreas itself producing the insulin. So that's a anatomical problem, a functional problem, versus the type 2, when it's not just the pancreas cells itself, it's the metabolism of the whole body. So there's a whole host of glucose circulating and it isn't able to be absorbed. It isn't able to be broken down. It may be the pancreatic cells, but it may be also some of the other metabolic factors. Most of our population suffer with the type 2 diabetes, and that is the one that's preventable by your lifestyle disorders.
What type that mean?
1, right? So type 1 is where those tend to be our children, and they present with type 1. That's a functional problem, not something preventable by what they're eating. Of course, they have to watch what they're eating, but what they eat doesn't necessarily affect their sugar, versus the type 2, what they eat affects dramatically because it's a metabolic dysfunction. Hope that makes sense.
What seven means? You say 1 to 6 good, but my wife reads 7. What that means?
Okay, so that's a different value. That's what we talk about, the HbA1c. So that's very different from when you take the little sugar value, the little prick, and you put it into the Diascan machine. That gives you a reading in milligrams per deciliter versus the HbA1c. We want that under 6. So that's a percentage. So it will say 1%, 2%, 3%, 4%, 5%, 6%. But anything over the 7%, in fact, they've shifted it down. Anything over 6.5% is considered too high. And that glycosylated hemoglobin is actually a better reading of your glucose management because it gives a management over the next or the past 3 months. Okay. So that's what he meant. If it's over 7, that is a little concerning. We've had patients with HbA1c all kind of 10 and 14, and that is where we need to do some serious adjustments and watching their habits and cutting down on nutritional factors. And of course, medications are key, play a key role in the therapy there. But under 6, we can manage with the lifestyle factors. We may not need to utilize all that amount of medications. We can look at just curbing habits. Does that make more sense to you? We broke down everything in simple forms.
7 bar, but not that bad.
Anything over 6 is considered elevated. So yes, 7 is considered something I'm concerned about. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you very much, sir. Right. Yeah, man, nice, man. Breaking it down there. Of course, Freedom 106.5 FM, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor. Alongside, of course, Sky 99.5 FM, 106.1 Sangeet, and Vibe City 105 FM. Or call numbers 627-3223 and 625-2257. Hello, good afternoon, welcome. Oh, lost that one there. Let's see if we have any WhatsApp messages. Remember, folks, you could send your WhatsApp messages at 306-1065. Let's take a call before we go there. Hello, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon, sir. Good afternoon, doctor. What I want to find out is about, with regards to climate change and all these kind of things, and food is actually getting hard to grow. Are there any regulations being put in place with regards to the amount of fertilizers and chemical sprays? Is it a conversation that the doctors and them are having with regards to this? If they are doing anything to look into these issues?
Definitely. So this is a conversation that's been they've been having for years now, not just in the last, say, 2 or 3 years. And yes, there's always conversation with the agricultural sector on the inclusion of fertilizers and what's safe and what's not safe. Yes, there's always the balance that's needed because we do need a level of fertilizer to maintain the plants, but at the same time, fertilizers can be chemicals. And that's why we encourage taking care, proper management and food hygiene. In fact, I did an article recently on food preparation and how foods should be washed, the temperature they should be washed at, and ensuring that all vegetables, all that come from these farming areas, are properly washed out in terms of removing any chemicals or residue that may stay on the surface, the skin of these fruits and vegetables. So yes, a host of conversations in that area, not just by medical teams, but by, I would say, multidisciplinary teams involving the agricultural sector, because we do need all hands on deck to improve or reduce the effects of climate change.
Okay, thank you very much. But one more thing, with regards to like regulations to monitoring of the actual sprays that the farmers are putting on, are there any tests in place to monitor these things, to monitor the levels they're using it at? Because as climate change is taking place, weather conditions, we find that there's more problems within the agriculture industry. So are we monitoring, proactively monitoring what we are eating on a daily basis?
Thank you so much. So I do believe there are ways in monitoring that. I certainly can find out more information because I'm not within the agricultural sector. All I know is particularly how our patients, our listeners should be able to prepare the food, say it be in restaurants or parents at home. And before the end of the afternoon, we will certainly reiterate that information on food preparation right here for all of our callers.
All right, folks, let's get some WhatsApp messages there. Good day. If your lymph node on the left side is 1 centimeter, is that very serious or cancerous?
So anytime we have a swollen lymph node, it is of concern. However, what is a lymph node? It's like the body's war zone where there is that collection of cells that's fighting off. It could be a cold, it could be an autoimmune condition. So not always it's considered cancerous. If you're seeing, however, lymph nodes that are becoming hard, that are evolving, that are growing in size, changing in size, changing in the color, in the way it looks, then please get it checked out. If you're noticing it under the and if you're within that age time, say between 30 and 45 or even up to 50, where a female can present with breast cancer, then you certainly need to get that checked out. If you can also notice lymph nodes at the base of under the neck, behind the ear, within the groin area, all of those are typical areas where we see lymph nodes. Again, any changes you're seeing in your body that was not there before, and you're seeing a speedier growth, you're seeing an accelerated growth, make sure and get it checked out.
All right, question here. Hi, good afternoon. What's a good eye drops to use, please? I know you don't give...
Yeah, so that's okay. Now, when it comes to eye drops, there are several different conditions that we use these eye drops for. We could be using the eye drops for glaucoma. We could be using the eye drops for cataract or even a conjunctivitis. So that there is three different eye drops. Or it may be that you're using the eye drops for red eyes or to lubricate the eyes. If it's the latter, there are over-the-counter options that can be your optician, the optometrist can easily recommend. But if it's one of the eye health conditions, please see the ophthalmologist and make sure you do a proper vision screening test, a proper examination of the eyes, so we can ensure the eye drops are suitable to you. You know, Base, I've had patients where one member of the family may have an eye condition and it may be cataract, and then another member of the family may have another eye condition and it may be glaucoma, but they be presumed that because it's the same eye, they can share the same eye drops, and that's not something we recommend, but we do know that it happens in families. And here's the why: don't do that, because some eye drops can have steroids, and one, if it does have steroids, it can worsen the condition of some eye health problems and accelerate it. So it's so important that you have your specific recommendations. Let the ophthalmologist make that decision.
All right, great. Let's take a call here. Hello, good afternoon. Lunchtime, doctor. Welcome.
Good afternoon to the panel. My question is this: if you're going to do oral surgery on your gum, is it compulsory that you stop Plavix and aspirin, two blood thinners?
So definitely, any sort of surgery that has to happen, not just the gum, it is always recommended by the dental surgeons, by whichever surgeons. They do recommend to ease off. They give you at least, say, 2 weeks or 8 to 10 days, ease off the aspirin and Plavix, because what those medications do is they do promote blood thinning, or they reduce the coagulation, and we want to ensure that at the surgery there isn't that blockage or over thinning of the blood where one can bleed heavily. So in the case of dental surgery, it's always a recommendation. Now, disclaimer, I'm not a dentist out there, but it is one that we know that all of our dental colleagues tend to recommend. And of course, when we have to see them post-op, we know this is something because we'll have to return them back to the aspirin. Most dentists, if it's a cardiac patient they have to operate on, what I do know they do is they may send a referral to the GP, to the cardiologist, to get clearance so that it's a combined, a collaborative effect of treatment for the patient. Hope that answers your question.
All right, folks, at lunchtime, doctor answering all your questions, 627-3223-625-2257. Let's get a call. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dave. Good afternoon to the doctor. Doc, I have two quick questions. One, what does cause hiccup? You know, like what we call hiccup, you know, sort of eat or drink something and all of a sudden you just sort of feel hiccup. What causes that? And two, dribbling at night. I mean, if I was playing sports, I didn't mind the dribbling, but when you're sleeping and you get up on your pillow wet, what has caused it to be dribbling? Thanks.
Okay, so let's talk about the hiccups. Now, hiccups tend to be an involuntary action of the body. Sometimes there can be actually no absolute reason for the hiccups. It's just a repeated spasm. Or sometimes it can actually be anxiety that brings on a hiccup. Or in some cases, like with children, it can be overstimulation. You tend to hear, especially with our little ones or babies, they tend to have this strong hiccup just after they would have had a meal. And of course, they're trying to digest all of that. The hiccup is actually a spasm in the diaphragm, and it's caused by the vocal cords. So it's really more so like an involuntary action. It's not necessarily one that you would want to treat. In fact, most persons, the recommendation for when there is a hiccup, it's to literally just try to breathe deeply, try to stay at calm, so there isn't that continued repetition or stimulation of, or overstimulation, I would say, of the muscles there. So that's what it tends to be. I know we were able to, I got the first question, but I may need you to repeat the second question.
Okay. All right, folks, once again, 627-3223-625-2257, the lunchtime doctor. There was a question here that I would have to dissect. All right, let's take this call. Hello, good afternoon. Oh, sorry. Lost that one. A person was asking, they are discharging and having a burning sensation after having, you know, sexual intercourse. Is there any need for concern?
Definitely. So in that case, it can be most likely male or female present with a UTI, a urinary tract infection. In fact, there's even a terminology called honeymoon cystitis. So after one may have gone on their honeymoon, they get this burning with post-intercourse, post-coitus, and that's a UTI. Is there something to be concerned? Yes. Because it could be a bacterial infection and needs to be treated right away. Who treats it? You can go to your GP, you can go to your healthcare professional, but please do get it treated because it can worsen and can accelerate up the urological system.
All right, question here on the WhatsApp. Doc, does a lump in the breast necessarily mean cancer?
Thank you very much, that person that sent in the question. Absolutely not. However, we do take the approach that we must rule out any cancer because we wouldn't want to miss that. But most lumps in the breast can be benign. And when I say benign, meaning non-cancerous, that may mean it can be a duct that's swollen. It can be a duct, alveolar duct, that becomes infected. It can even be other nodules that present within the breast tissue. However, we must treat every single lump within, or any single swelling within the breast tissue, because of the high incidence of breast cancer, rule out breast cancer. And why? Because we wouldn't want to miss that situation.
All right, good afternoon, doctor. I am a diabetic insulin user. I have that tingling feeling in my feet and fingers, mostly at night. Also, night shakes. Within recent weeks while sleeping, I have awoken with pain of biting my tongue. Is this a symptom of diabetes too?
So when it comes to the biting, okay, yes, the caller previously asked about dribbling during the night. I just got that message there. So anything when it comes to a dryness in the mouth, biting in the mouth, or even dribbling, they can be symptoms of diabetes, but I'd want to rule out something called obstructive sleep apnea, or even something called butylism, where one is grinding the teeth. So it can be one of the symptoms of diabetes, but it's not more commonly that. Dry mouth is, however, one of the symptoms of diabetes. But when you're seeing that dribbling, or the grinding of the teeth, or even the biting, that tends to be more an obstructive sleep apnea situation. Either which way, both of them needs to be checked out.
All right, let's get a call. 625-2257, 627-3223. Once again, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor. Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangit 106.1, Sky 99.5, and Vibe City 105 FM. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon, doctor. As a hypertensive patient, the doctor has recommended enapril. Acetyl salicylic acid, atenolol, right? Right. So I'm using so much medication, but how much salt should I take? Because if you take, if pressure goes too low, you'll catch cramps. So I don't know how much salt I should eat. Kakaita, a non-salt food. Thanks.
So thank you so much. I know those medications might be a little complex. Yes, you need to continue and be consistent with it. How much salt? Wherever you can reduce the amount of salt, that is recommended. Because you would notice from the number of medications you're on, you're quite a few, which means that blood pressure is probably rather elevated and needs to be checked in properly. So let's take it step by step, be consistent with the medication, reduce the amount of salt. Sometimes we encourage the patient to go cold turkey, ease off completely, but we do know that is difficult. So we tell them to reduce, and substitute where they can. Hope that answers the question.
All right, let's get another call here. Lunchtime doctor, hello, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon, doctor. I was trying to find out, when you take a dose of Zentel, how long after you can take a next one? And how are you going to know it works? Because you know it doesn't get an operation with us. Could you please tell me about it?
Thank you so much, but I want you to know I didn't quite get a bit of the history, so I will not be able to give an indication of when you're taking your next dose of Zentel, right? Keep in mind that each patient has a unique situation, and each patient, we typically go through a full history, a full examination, rather than just a spot recommendation. Okay, so I would suggest whoever prescribed the Zentel that we continue to engage in their conversation and advice to know when you would need another one. Hope that answers, or hope that gives a little bit of clarity to your situation.
All right. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon to the panel. My wife is 59 years of age, hypertension, suffers with asthma, but she always sleeps with her mouth open. What is the reason for that?
Okay, so it may be in her case with her sleeping with the mouth open, just as I mentioned before, with those that are hypertensive, they can also bring about a layer of obstructive sleep apnea. I would want to be checked for that in particular. And yes, there are examinations and investigations to be checked for obstructive sleep apnea. The ENT doctor can check it. Even the GP will be able to give you a preliminary examination. Sleeping with the mouth open is not a good sign at all, because the air is passing through the mouth rather than the nostrils, and that could reduce the efficiency or the exchange of oxygen and carbon dioxide. Hope that answers your question.
All right, let's get a WhatsApp question here. Hi, I'm a 56-year-old male. Blood pressure is 137 over 84. Is that too high? And what can I do to keep it down?
Can you just repeat the value? How much?
Let me get it back here. Yeah, 137 over 84.
Right. So 137 on 84 is mildly elevated. I'm not overly worried about it. What I would be worried about is if it's 137 on 84 all the time. So if it is like that, then it is mild hypertension. What you can do about it, just as we talked. One, reduce your salt. Increase your exercise. Increase your water. Watch your sleeping hygiene, your sleeping habits. Manage your stress. And of course, more fruits and vegetables on that plate, and as natural as possible. So this week on Wednesday is actually World Hypertension Day. And in our Health Plus publication on Wednesday, because there won't be a publication tomorrow, we are discussing knowing your numbers, what those numbers are, some ways to bring down those values, and more importantly, what we want to prevent: stroke, cerebral accidents, deep vein thrombosis, hypertension crises, how to prevent heart attacks. So during the course of this week, we're going to talk more about knowing your numbers. With respect to 137 on 84, it is mildly elevated. Of course, there are lifestyle habits you can include to reduce. If you are on medications, stay consistent with your medication.
All right, let's get another WhatsApp here. Hi, doctor. What causes me to get a yeast infection before my period? Over-the-counter medication doesn't seem to really be helping. What can you recommend?
Okay, in this case, and I'm so sorry experiencing that, because it can be quite painful and traumatizing, we need to look at it. There is something, just like there's GERD, as in reflux from the esophagus, there can be reflux of the urine at the lower levels as well. And that's what we'll need to investigate. A yeast infection is a fungal infection. And of course, it may just be, we're looking at the hygiene. You may want to at least make an appointment with a gynecologist so we can do a proper investigation. We may need to do what we call a speculum investigation to go a little deeper and ensure there isn't the reflux of the urine upwards that's worsening or causing that yeast. Or if there isn't any, sometimes the natural flora of the area overpowers one into the other. And that's why it's so important that you see a gynecologist.
All right, 627-322-3625-2257. Lunchtime, doctor. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What causes a blood clot in the brain and a stroke in the brain?
Thank you so much. Very, very important question. So we've been talking about stroke and that blood clot quite a lot. It's a combination. It's like a petri dish where things come together. So high cholesterol will worsen the clots. If your blood pressure is elevated, it will trigger off the clots. And then, of course, if the heart is not perfusing or pumping the blood throughout the body effectively, so a combination of things. Think of it as pipes running through a building. If there's sludge in the pipes, then the sludge is going to block up those pipes. If the water can't pass through the pipes, or the water is going at a high-pitched value, it may shoot off the side of the sludge, and then it goes into a narrow vessel. That may be the vessels in the brain, like the arterioles or the venules in the brain. And if it blocks it in parts within the brain, that triggers a stroke. Now, stroke, we're going to be discussing it on Wednesday because an article is in your paper, in your Health Plus publication. Stroke is one of the most debilitating actions. There are two types of stroke. There's a hemorrhagic stroke and an ischemic. Ischemic is the one that's where there's a blood clot. Hemorrhagic is where there's a blood bleed. Two different types of strokes. So on Wednesday, in your paper and on here, on your lunchtime doctor, we're going to be discussing the different types of stroke. Stay tuned today, tomorrow, and of course Wednesday for more of that information.
All right. Hi, doctor. I would like to know if a very, very serious headache is a precursor to Bell's palsy. I have a friend whom doctor had misdiagnosed as having asthma when it was a panic attack and was placed on serious asthma medications. However, after 3 months, this person had Bell's palsy. Those asthma medication caused a headache and was not helping with her breathing at all. Your response is well appreciated.
So anytime we have headaches, that is cause of concern. Yes, it can be a precursor for Bell's palsy. And thank you for the very detailed information. However, any headaches, I would want checked out because it could be an indication of a vision disturbance. It could be that eye health pathology. It could even be directly related to ENT dysfunction, the ear, nose, and throat. Headaches on the whole is one we want to get checked out because there's always a much more sinister cause. Most times, however, headaches can be caused by stress-related concerns, so it's important we rule that out. But when it comes to Bell's palsy, because there's a host of more generalized type symptoms that may present, yes, we need to get it checked out.
All right. I have a problem, doctor, that's been bothering me for a while. Could you tell me of a remedy if you know? Can you help so that I can stop biting my nails? Thanks.
So when it comes to biting nails, that is directly related to some sort of anxiety-related concern. And that's something we know. It's a habit. It's one of those poor habits that may develop as the body goes through different emotional status. Not just biting nails. We have patients who sometimes use their nails and pierce into the side. And it's a way of releasing the internalized stress or distress one may be feeling. Here's the many behavior-changing habits that your healthcare professional may engage you in. They may even recommend you see a psychologist, depending on how serious it is. It's important that first and foremost, I'll talk about the ABCs. So A, knowing and being aware. So recognizing it. Two, B, sometimes you need to create those boundaries of stress. So if things are stressing you, knowing the triggers, then preventing those triggers. If you can, if traffic is a trigger and you must get to work at a certain time and you must engage in traffic, that's not a boundary you can prevent. But you can, say, navigate around it, probably leave earlier, probably put things in place so you avoid the traffic. So knowing your boundaries. And then C. So A, awareness. B, boundaries. C, control. Control what you can. And know that not everything is within your control. In most times, in those cases of anxiety, especially where one may lead to biting the nails, it's simply because one may feel things are out of their control. I always tell my patients, especially those with anxiety and depression, identify, start a journal. In those moments, just write down, if you can, or note it mentally, three things you can control. And in returning your body, returning your thought process to some level of management, knowing, okay, I may not be able to control the traffic, but I can control my reaction to the traffic. So I may then put on the radio, listen to a nice program like the Lunchtime Doctor, or listen to some nice music and distract from the stress of the traffic. That can shift the behavior of biting the nails. That's just one strategy. There are many, many strategies you may need to see or engage a therapist, a psychologist, or just have the conversation with someone. Hope that answers your question.
All right. Good day, doctor. My blood count is 4.3. I went to the hospital in Arima, and they told me to use USA Transit and ferroglobing liquid. Will that help?
Now, anyone with a 4.3 milligrams per deciliter blood count, I don't believe they would only recommend over-the-counter medications like ferroglobin and the other one you suggested there. That anything under 8, we typically admit and transfuse right away. So yes, those medications will help. Be careful with that blood count walking around. You may be exposed to having falls, being very dizzy, easily fatigued. Even your heart rate can be affected by anemia.
All right, we have some questions coming here from Sangeet. I don't know if it's from the same person, but along the same lines. Hi, doctor. Can a 42-year-old still get pregnant? And when is the best time to get pregnant?
So, yes, a 42-year-old can certainly still get pregnant, but a very detailed examination and history is needed with that patient and their obstetrician or their gynecologist first. We need to look at your history. We need to look at your reproductive history in particular, what medical concerns, if you're on any OCPs, that's the oral contraceptive pill. And of course, we will need to check on the male partner as well. Sometimes we need to do a semen analysis, check the percentages there, the motility percentage in particular, to ensure that there's a proper match and efficiency on both sides. Hope that answers your question.
Hi, Doc. My friend really wants to know if she didn't have asthma and was on those serious asthma medications, if that could have caused her face to twist on one side and was referred to as Bell palsy, or could it have been a stroke? That's referring to the same question from
earlier. Yes, the same patient early on. So typically with asthma medications, we do not see that side effect of Bell's palsy. Again, in a case like that, we definitely want you to get it checked out. This is not this particular forum is one to guide you to go to the healthcare professional. What are the red flags? But in a case of Bell's palsy, that needs immediate treatment and, of course, immediate review by a healthcare professional. Like I mentioned, the asthma medications will not typically result in Bell's palsy. Hope that answers your question.
All right. We have just about 5 more minutes, folks. Lunchtime, doctor. So you said tomorrow there will be no Health Plus?
Tomorrow, we won't have a Health Plus in the paper. Mm-hmm. We will still have our CNC3 health segment in Morning Brew at around 7:30, 7:40. You can join me on CNC3 Morning Brew with your host, Jason. I'll come on around 7:30. And on Wednesday, we have a special themed publication for Health Plus, World Hypertension Day. Now, keep in mind that this disease called hypertension is so negatively impacting persons across the world. Something like 11 billion persons are affected by hypertension, that there's a whole day declared for this. In fact, World Health Organization shares that hypertension is the number one cause of premature preventable death worldwide. But here's the thing, we know that fact, yet only 1 in 5 adults have it under control, and then 46% of adults are unaware. So that's almost half the population walking around with hypertension and unaware that they have this condition. So in our Health Plus publication on Wednesday, we are showing you how to check your blood pressure. In fact, just Sometimes I've talked about it here, putting the hand on, making sure you sit. We actually go through how each particular measure can increase your value if it's not well done. So World Health Organization and PAHO are recommending proper. The theme this year is accurate measurement. And it's all going to be in your paper on Wednesday in your Guardian. Look out for your Health Plus in Guardian.
All right, folks, two more minutes to go. 627-3223-625-2257. Let's see if you can squeeze in a call quickly. Hi, doctor. Is it okay to use organic protein powder with oats, banana, and peanut butter for breakfast every morning?
So, yes, you can certainly use that. I may not suggest every morning. Again, everything in moderation. Peanut does have a high amount. So here's the thing. You suggested there your oats, which has a high amount of proteins. Then, of course, the proteins and the peanut. High amount of proteins. So make sure you're not overwhelming your kidneys and you are ensuring enough adequate hydration. You may want to ensure as well that you're balancing it out. Not too much sugars. Again, peanut butter, high amount of cholesterol and sugars. But if you're balancing, maintaining your hydration, then certainly you can have that every day.
All right. Nice. One more here, doctor. Is aspirin good to take?
Again, everything in moderation, just like this, the pinch of salt. Now, if it is, you are a cardiovascular patient, then yes, aspirin is part of the regime. I would suggest, however, let your healthcare professional prescribe it so that it can be monitored. The aspirin we tend to have all our patients on is the enteric coated aspirin. I must repeat that. Why the enteric coated aspirin? Because the normal aspirin that's not enteric coated can be harsh on the esophageal lining, and we have had patients that were treating for cardiovascular concerns and on a long amount of time of aspirin, and then unfortunately they present with a peptic ulcer or a bleed because of the chronic use of aspirin. That's why we tend to a healthcare professional that's recommending it, monitoring it, and of course giving you proper advice. Hope that answers the question.
Okay, and of course you've answered all the questions. It's now 1 p.m. Thank you very much, doctor.
Thank you so much, Base. I love all the questions you all send in. Sometimes I lean in on my, want to say, 20 years of medical history. And it reminds me sometimes of my year one when I just graduated, some of the cases we saw there, or even cases that we're seeing up to this weekend. I'm so grateful that to all who send in their questions, they bravely send in their questions and they bravely call. I know this program is a source of health advice and information for many, not just in Trinidad, but across the region. So thank you to all of our listeners, all our sponsors, and of course the entire team at the TBC Network, Base, you in particular, for making sure this program comes to you all, our listeners.
All right, thank you there very much, doctor, and thank you for being the professional that you are. Catch you tomorrow.
Indeed. Have a blessed day. Be safe, everyone.
Nice, man. You've been listening to The Lunchtime Doctor, folks, on Vibe City 105 FM, Sangit 106.1, Sky 99.5, and of course at Freedom 106.5 FM. Do enjoy the rest of your day.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.